Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
Good afternoon, Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Tuesday, August the 21st, and we got a great show for you today, as later on in the podcast, I will be joined by brand new Miami Dolphins reporter for ESPN, Cameron Wolf, and we talk to him about all things Miami Dolphins, get his thoughts on the roster, get his thoughts on who is going to make this team, who won't make this team. And also, he shares where he thinks Miami might be looking on the outside via trade or when there's some guys that are released by some other teams, who they might be looking at just position-wise and such like that. So it was great to have Cameron on, and we'll have that later on in the podcast. Before I get to that, though, I do want to talk about this week's preseason game that is on this Saturday night at Hard Rock Stadium against the Baltimore Ravens. This is probably the most important preseason game for the Dolphins in a long time, actually, because I think there's a lot of uncertainty with a lot of spots on this roster right now. If you look at this Miami Dolphins roster, right now, heading into week one, we don't know who the starting tight end is. We don't know who the number two quarterback is. We don't know who's going to be the third starting outside linebacker. We don't know who's going to start opposite Xavien Howard. And we're not even quite sure who's going to be the opening day place kicker as well. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And I think, look, in their final preseason game, look, nobody of any significance plays. And that game, I don't want to say it's totally worthless, but on many levels it really is totally worthless. So this is going to be the last chance for some guys who, outside of your everyday practice, when you're hitting heads with the same guys you hit heads with every day since, you know, May, June, July. This is the last chance where some guys really have the opportunity to stand out and make a name for themselves against a different team. And I'm going to run through these spots real quick and just tell you my thoughts as of today. Obviously, this is all subject to change, and we're going to learn a lot more Saturday night when they play the Ravens. When it comes to the tight end, I think when all is said and done, I think week one, the starter on paper will be A.J. Derby, but I think Mike Gesicki is going to be on the field a whole heck of a lot. And if I had to guess, by week three or four, Mike Gesicki might be the full-time starter at tight end. I just think he's just too talented of a player to not have on the field as much as you possibly can. I think they might ease him into it, though. So I think when all said and done, week one is going to be A.J. Derby. Marquise Gray, who is now right now in the concussion protocol, he's been hurt a bit in this training camp. That might hurt him when it's all said and done, because you know Smite's going to make the team. You know Gesicki's going to make the team. I think A.J. Derby, he looked strong that last game. He had a bad offensive pass interference call against him, but he looked strong against the Panthers. I think he'll make this team. So if Miami carries four tight ends, it will be great, but here's the question. Will they carry four? We don't know. So I think how that shakes out will be A.J. Derby will be the starter early on, but Mike Gesicki, you know, they might not be out of the month of September before he takes the starter role. At backup quarterback, honestly, I have no clue. None of these guys have really looked that good. I think we can now sort of cross off Bryce Petty. Even though he's looked probably the best through the first two preseason games, he's not getting the reps in practice, and he probably won't even play in this week's preseason game. And if you're not on the field for the third preseason game, you're not going to make this roster. So as much as I've been pounding the table for Bryce Petty, it's not going to happen, I think. So that leaves us with Fells and Osweiler. Honestly, you can flip a coin. I think they both are nothing to write home about. Fells has a low ceiling, which he's probably already hit, so he's not going to get much better than what you see right now out of him. Osweiler, Look, it's Brock Osweiler at the end of the day. He's a big guy who can't get out of his own way. He hasn't looked good at all in training camp or in the two preseason games. So, I don't know. If I had to guess and put a gun to my head, I'll say Osweiler wins the job, but I'm not confident in that in the least. And if you told me Fales did, I wouldn't argue with you. Linebacker's interesting because we started off camp with Stephon Anthony sort of holding down that third outside linebacker spot. Then Jerome Baker, after that first strong preseason game against Tampa Bay, sort of supplanted him. But there's a dark horse here that nobody's talking about. And Chase Allen, throughout all of the OTAs and all of training camp, has been performing at a solid level. And I would not be shocked in the least bit if, as a dark horse, the Miami Dolphins not wanting to start a third-round rookie at outside linebacker week one against the Titans decide, you know what, we'll sort of ease Jerome Baker into that role too. Let's start off the year with Chase Allen starting at outside linebacker. I think Stephon Anthony had his chance, and that first game against Tampa Bay, the first preseason game, I know it's only the preseason, folks, and you don't want to hit the panic button and stuff, but that was as bad a game as I've seen someone play, preseason or regular season. He was lost. He was not in the right spot at all. And you sort of combine that off of last year when the Saints, they got rid of him for a reason, which I think we all know. And now, and then last year when he was on the field for the Miami Dolphins, you know, he ran around. He's got speed. He's got size. But just seems like he's never in the right spot. So I don't think they trust Stephon Anthony. And then you got the rookie, who I think has a very high ceiling, Jerome Baker. Very promising, and I think long-term is going to be a stud for the Miami Dolphins at linebacker. But I think right away they might want to ease him into it, not overwhelm him and put too much on his plate and have him start. So I think Chase Allen, as a sleeper dark horse, is going to win that third outside linebacker spot. At cornerback, honestly, another spot I have no idea. Obviously, the Miami Dolphins are not happy with guys like Lippitt and Tankersley. Probably less so with Torrey McTyer, but there wasn't as much expected out of Torrey McTyer. So he might get a little pass there. Bobby McCain, he might be the fallback option that sort of gets the job by default. And that's fine because, you know, I like him a lot, Bobby McCain. I think he's more than just a slot cornerback. He'll probably get the job unless Miami can bring someone in from the outside. And I would say starting Sunday morning, this Sunday morning, till September 8th, the Miami Dolphins, just like every other team in the league, are going to be looking to make trades to sort of add guys in positions in need. And I think clearly cornerback's at the top of the list. And I think they would like to keep McCain as their primarily slot cornerback, but they might have to make a move here to make some sort of trade. Maybe it's player for player. Maybe they part with a late round pick that's a conditional pick that will move up all depending on playing time. Or maybe they find a team who just wants to move on from someone and they part with, you know, just like last year, a fifth round pick when they made the trade for Stephon Anthony, or maybe even more, like a pick in round four for somebody if it's the right guy. So I think right now, if you're asking me who starts week one, it is Bobby McCain. But they're going to look to add someone. And if they don't add someone, you know they're going to just absolutely push guys like Tankersley and Lippitt to just improve and get better so they can start and so they can put Bobby McCain back in the slot and then they can put Minkah Fitzpatrick back at safety. I think that's what they want to do. I just don't know if they'll be able to do it week one because, you know, Lippitt doesn't seem 100%. Tankersley hasn't performed well, and it's been a rough summer for those guys. At the kicker job, Jason Sanders, unless he totally implodes these final two preseason games, probably has a job. If another team did release a veteran that Miami was in love with, they could look to pick him up, but also finances will play an issue there well. The Miami Dolphins walked away from Cody Parkey and didn't try to re-sign him because of finances. If there's a kicker out there and there's a handful of teams after that kicker, Miami probably isn't going to get into a bidding war of any kind to try and land that kicker when they know they used a draft pick on Jason Sanders. So, kicker, I think Sanders will be the guy week one, but I would not be shocked if a veteran guy is released if he did end up in Miami. Just like last year when Andrew Franks, everyone thought he had the job lined up, and of course, last minute, Miami had the opportunity to sign Cody Parkey, and that's what they did. So I wanted to run that down real quick because, look, this preseason game on Saturday, well, the outcome of the game means absolutely nothing. There's a lot of jobs here at stake, and there's a lot of sort of uncertainty with a lot of positions on this roster, more so than we've seen in previous years. So this is going to be an interesting game on Saturday, and I wanted to run down a few of those spots and share my thoughts.
So right now we're going to take a quick break, and when I come back, we will be joined by Miami Dolphins reporter for ESPN, Cameron Wolf,
as we sort of pick his brain on the Miami Dolphins roster, get his thoughts on a lot of the players on the team, as well as his thoughts on the upcoming season as well and what he sees for the Miami Dolphins in 2018. So everyone sit tight, and we'll be back with Cameron Wolf right after this.
Simbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get your Miami Dolphins memorabilia. Simbad Sports has the likes of Rashad Jones, Cam Wake, Kiko Alonso, and Frank Gore in for autograph signings within the past year alone. So when in South Florida area, visit Simbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com sent you.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com hotline is Cameron Wolf, the new Miami Dolphins reporter for ESPN. How are you doing today, Cameron?
Doing well. How are you?
I am doing great. First and foremost, how do you like life now in South Florida?
It's been good, man. Been here for about a week and a half now, so getting adjusted, learning the way to land, and enjoying the water area.
I'm sure you are. It's a beautiful place to live. Let's talk some about the Miami Dolphins first and foremost. I guess first we'll start with the quarterback spot. What are your thoughts from what you've seen so far on Ryan Tannehill? How has he looked? How has the knee look? And what are your thoughts on him so far in training camp?
Yeah, I think Ryan Tannehill has looked good. I think that there's a chance that he'll surprise some folks who may have forgot, what he can do and what he'll provide for this Dolphins offense. I haven't seen anything that's shown the need to be a hindrance. Obviously, he's got a brace on it, but I don't think that his speed or mobility has been affected. And he looks like he's moving around, throwing the ball accurately. We've yet to see him take a lot of deep shots down the field, but talking to Adam Gase over the last couple of days, he mentioned that was more a happenstance of the defense playing a lot of zone and soft coverage rather than, something purposeful. So I'd like to see him, open it up a little bit on the offense. But so far we've seen a strong Miami Dolphins up-tempo offense that you got to figure out a way to eliminate some penalties and score some touchdowns.
Yep, absolutely. And I know it's been reported in a lot of places that they've run the no-huddle offense in practice at a really fast speed, which I'm sure is something they're going to want to do come the regular season. How fast are they running that no huddle offense, and how has it looked in practice when they do run that?
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, this week has really been the first week we have seen a lot of the offense going against the scout team defense. A lot of it during training camp was a lot of ones versus ones, and different views, but now we're seeing them against the scout team. They're running a lot of their scheme, and yeah, we've seen a lot of that up tempo. And the thing about the up tempo is they can have different speeds of up tempo. There's the fast, and then there's something they call ludicrous, which is the fastest of the fast, and that's what they get going, try to keep teams off guard. So I think we've seen it a little bit in the preseason games where they've started to keep it flowing, and I think you'll see a different level of it once Adam Gase is comfortable letting the tools go once the regular season starts.
Yeah, that's going to be real fun to watch, I think. And behind Ryan Tannehill, obviously they have three guys who are fighting for that number two quarterback spot. And through the first two preseason games, it's been up and down for a few of the guys
when it's all said and done, which one of these guys between Osweiler, Fales, and Bryce Petty, which one will sort of grab that job, win the job, you think, when it's all said and done?
Yeah, I think we're still trying to decide that. Honestly, I haven't been super impressed with any of the three quarterbacks. I honestly think the battle was more towards David Fales than Brock Osweiler. I know Bryce Petty's in there, but I haven't seen him get many second-team reps. You know, we asked Adam Gase about if Bryce Petty had a chance, and he sort of gave the coach-speak answer that everybody's got a chance. But I don't think that you're going to see Bryce Petty win this backup job. I think the most likely option is whoever plays the best out of these last two games between Brock Osweiler and David Fales. If I had to choose, I may say David Fales, just because I think he has an ability not to turn the ball over as much as Brock Osweiler has. But this is an area where I think I wouldn't be surprised to see the Dolphins look outside of their roster. I know there's been some talk about Teddy Bridgewater. I have doubts on whether the Jets would even trade inside the division. But I think that's an area that can be improved, that backup quarterback position, if they decided to go outside of what they have with Fales and Osweiler.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things I think a lot of fans like myself and such this offseason were a little surprised, not so much in the draft, that in free agency, after everything they went through last year with Matt Moore and Fales was in there at the end and Jay Cutler, that they didn't, you know, maybe spend a little money in free agency to bring someone in. So I think I would not be shocked either to see them try and sign someone. I know the talk about possibly making a trade with the Jets. I don't see it happen either, because why would the Jets send him to someone inside their own division? I just, unless Miami truly parted with something a lot, I don't see it happening either. Heading to tight end, there's a lot of guys there, and it's sort of working itself out. That's one other spot. Come week one, who do you think is going to start at tight end? And more importantly, I guess, is who do you think is going to be on the field the most throughout the game?
Yeah, I think you're going to see plenty of Mike Gesicki. I don't know if he's going to end up officially being the starter, but he's clearly their most talented tight end. He's the guy who's going to play that Julius Thomas role, so to speak, trying to be a threat in the red zone, a threat on third down. And he's their best receiving tight end. They drafted him in the second round for a reason. So I don't know if he'll officially be the starter, but I do imagine that he will be the best tight end that ends up with the most receiving yards by the end of the year. I know they've been working in a lot of Marquise Gray and A.J. Derby with the first team over the last, you know, few weeks. But I'm curious to see how many tight ends do they keep. Can both of those guys make the roster? You've got another draft pick in Durham Smythe that's probably going to make the roster. He was a fourth-round pick, and he's a blocking tight end. So I think it's going to be intriguing to see, do the Dolphins let the keys go and let the rookies play and Gesicki and Smythe, or do they have to bide their time behind Gray and Derby? And that's something that, you know, the rookies are going to have to prove their worth, prove that they deserve to be on the field to beat out some of those vets.
Yep, absolutely. And it'll be real interesting to see how that sort of shakes out, because I do think the two rookies are pretty good, and it seems like they are sort of knocking on the door to get on the field and play a lot from all things we've seen so far in camp. You wrote an article, I think today actually it was released, about the pre-snap penalties that was an issue for the Miami Dolphins last year and through two preseason games continue to be a big issue. Talk a little bit about that and what can be done to fix something like this, because whatever they're doing is clearly not working, because this was something that was a huge problem all of last year. And through the first two preseason games, it seems like it's still there. What do you think what can be done to sort of fix that, you think?
Yeah, it's a frustrating thing, honestly. And it's less about the frequency as much as the timing and the significance of those penalties. As we saw in the preseason, particularly with this last game, they had scenarios where they had a good drive, they had a chance to score a touchdown, and whether it was a holding penalty, a false start, a delay of game penalty, those penalties really derailed drives, and that helped them to hold for field goals. And you can't win often kicking field goals in this league. So I think that a lot of it's mental. I think a lot of it's accountability, which has sort of been a buzzword here over the last week or two, holding players accountable for the mistakes they're making. I know that's been something that Gase has been focused on. Their preseason numbers of penalties have actually been better than they were in the regular season, so maybe that's a sign for progress, but I think they still have to correct a lot of the offensive mental mistakes that kill drives, because this isn't a team that can overcome a ton of those silly penalties and expect to win. This is a team that needs to play clean football, play disciplined football, and be where they're supposed to be, and wait for the other team to make a mistake. That's how this team is going to win.
That's how it worked in 2016 when they made the playoffs last, that because they played clean football, ran the ball, and that's what was the formula then, and that's what they have to get back to. But yeah, because there's so many penalties, it seemed like this past week against the Panthers, just when they got close to the end zone, be a holding call. Just when they got close, it'd be a negative play. So yeah, they have to clean that up. On the opposite side of the ball, who's going to start opposite Xavien Howard is a big topic down there, I know. What have you heard? Who do you think sort of, if they don't make a move to add someone outside who's not on the roster as of now, between Lippitt, Tankersley, and McTyer, which one of those three guys do you think will sort of win that job when all said and done?
Well, honestly, I think right now it's looking like it's Bryce McCain. I mean, right, he's been playing for the second week in a row. It's been Bobby McCain. It's been on the outside, and you know, obviously he's a slot cornerback, but Gase feels really comfortable in his ability to play on the outside and play in the slot. And it seems like he has a trust level in McCain that he doesn't have any of the other three cornerbacks. So I think if the regular season started today, you would see Bobby McCain as your starting outside cornerback outside of Xavien Howard, and seeing Minka Fitzpatrick playing slot cornerback when they went in a nickel. So they feel like that right now is their best lineup. I do expect them to add another cornerback, whether it's after waivers, whether it's via trade right at that time. We're not sure yet, but I do think they'll add some sort of depth. Those other three guys have a lot of ground to make up to really earn Adam Gase's trust and that he can do that. So we'll see. We have one more big preseason game to go with the starters to see if anybody can separate themselves. But there does need to be some certainty in that cornerback rotation as we get towards the regular season.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the rookie, Minka Fitzpatrick, who, you know, after Miami selected him in round one, all the reports were, this kid's, like, smart. He puts in the time. He puts in the work. We don't know if he'll be a star, but he probably won't be a bust. And it seems like from the first few games, that is spot on. What have you seen so far out of the first-round pick, Minka Fitzpatrick, and how has he looked?
Yeah, I definitely like what I've seen from Minka Fitzpatrick. I had a conversation with him last week, and I was really impressed by the maturity and the knowledge that he had as far as the scheme and what is all asked for him. A lot of times you see rookies that are swimming, and you know, he would have a perfect excuse to swim, given all the roles they're asking him to do, from playing safety, from playing nickel corner, from playing in the dime, while learning the defense. But he seems to be really confident, really comfortable in his role, and you can see it in his play. He plays fast, he attacks the ball, and he seems to always be in the right position. So the coaches I've talked to have raved about him. They think that he's going to be an impact player from year one. I wouldn't be surprised to see him end up being in the defensive rookie of the year conversation before the year's up. So he has a lot to prove on the field, but I think that him, along with Xavien Howard and Rashad Jones, can end up making this secondary, you know, a surprise unit if they can figure out that other cornerback spot, like you mentioned, opposite to Xavien Howard.
Yeah, I think the secondary right now, even though they might be a little shaky at the one cornerback spot, overall looks strong. And I would say one of maybe the strongest units on the team. I think where the questions are on the front seven on defense, because what we saw the other night obviously was not good. And even last year, the run defense, you know, wasn't great. It was so-so at times. And if the Miami Dolphins don't add someone at, say, quarterback, or if they don't add someone at cornerback, I would have to think linebacker or defensive tackle might be on a list where they look to add someone else as well, just to help shore up that run defense, because it seems like it still might be a bit of an issue heading into the regular season.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, that's something that we talked to Adam Gase for sure. We, you know, he mentioned that he feels a little bit more comfortable with the defensive line than maybe some people would think, but you know, linebacker, he said that's something that they're still growing with. They're still trying to figure that out. There's a lot of young players there with the, you know, Raekwon McMillan, and you've got Jerome Baker, two guys who are essentially rookies, both, you know, playing essentially starting roles. So that's a lot to ask for two guys. And you see a lot of times they're thinking. You can see them thinking a little bit much, and that's not the way you want to play as a linebacker. So I think that's going to be something that's a work in progress this season. Like you mentioned, depending on who comes out on waivers, I wouldn't be shocked to see them add a starting caliber linebacker just to give them another veteran that can play in that level. But they're going to have some ups and downs. The run defense has already shown some struggles, and I think that's going to be a problem area early in the season. And that's something that they're going to have to figure out, how can we correct this? Because teams are going to keep running it down your throat until you prove that you can stop them. And that's going to start week one when they face Tennessee and Derrick Henry.
That's just what I was going to ask you, because that's a team you know very well. The Tennessee Titans with Henry and now Lewis as well from the Patriots is now on the Titans. They are going to line up and play smash mouth against Miami week one. So they will get an early, early test in the regular season there. So far in camp, who would you say is the biggest surprise in your eyes that you've seen in the Miami Dolphins in training camp?
You know, as an outsider, I think two things have stood out to me. Actually, three things. I'll go with three things. I'll go with two old guys and one young guy. And I think that seeing Frank Gore up close, you know, from the outside, a lot of people have wondered, is he done? You know, why are the Dolphins bringing him back? He's 35-year-old running back. He's, you know, way over his time. I haven't seen any of that. You know, he looks like a guy who's still in his prime. He obviously hasn't got the reps that, you know, a starting running back typically gets because Kenyon Drake's here and he's an older guy. But every time he touches the ball, he seems to make a play. He's got a shifty way about him that's impressed Ryan Tannehill and Adam Gase. And he has a, you know, a quiet confidence, a quiet maturity that seemed to rub off on a lot of the team, on Drake. And I think that he's going to have an impact on this team on the field and off the field. So I've been impressed with him. That stood out. And then Cam Wake, he's a guy who, you know, also like Gore, who's, you know, 35, 36 years old. You expect that guy to be just hanging on. And you could make an argument that he's the best defender on the Dolphins defense. So I think that those two guys have really impressed me with how they practice and just what they still have left in the tank. I don't think either guy has shown me any signs that, hey, they're just a vet hanging on for their last year. So I think those guys have impressed me. And then on the young guy side, Xavien Howard, we talked about him a little bit already, but I think that he has the chops to be a number one cornerback, not only for the Dolphins, but a number one quarterback that we can start to talk about on the national level. And I know he had that big splash on the radar last season, that big game against the Patriots that caught some people's eyes. But I think this year he'll prove that that wasn't a fluke. And I think he'll try to enter his name into some of those top cornerbacks in the AFC if he lives up to his potential. And I'm really excited to see what he can do against some of the top receivers that he has to face this upcoming season.
Yeah, absolutely, because he ended last year those about final five or six games or so playing so well, so well. He also had a big game against the Broncos as well. I mean, he ended the year so well. I think we're all very excited to see what he can do in 2018 now, because it's his third year, but his first year, he missed a lot of camp. He was hurt on and off all year. So last year, essentially not his rookie year, but in some ways it was. And I think this year he's ready to make that next step, that leap to be one of the top guys in the league. Wide receivers real quick. Isaiah Ford, he's a name we've heard all throughout camp. First, will Miami carry six wide receivers, you think? And if they do, will the sixth one be Ford?
Yeah, I think it'll be based on other position groups. I think in this modern NFL, we see a lot of teams, including the Dolphins, carrying two quarterbacks, which gives them a little bit more flexibility to add at running back and receiver and tight end. They're going to end up, you know, basically choosing, hey, do we want four running backs? Do we want four tight ends? Do we want six receivers? And, you know, there's going to be a no to at least one of those questions. So this Isaiah, in a sense, Isaiah Ford may be competing less against the other receivers and more against a guy like a Sonoris Perry or a guy like a A.J. Derby or Marquise Gray to see who is more important to the back end of that roster. So I think for Isaiah Ford, obviously they think that he has a lot of long-term potential here. He hasn't flashed a ton and camp and then preseason. So I think the Titan Dolphins would love to see a little bit more out of him. But I do know that they're high on him. I saw Danny Amendola in practice today, giving him some pointers after practice and really trying to give him some lessons and teach him. And that's the type of thing that you want out of Amendola in a vet. But it also shows that, hey, this guy's important for us, whether this year or in the long term, that they're going to invest some time to giving us some tips. So I think that Isaiah Ford still has to work his way on the roster. But if the Dolphins feel like a sixth receiver is more important than a fourth running back or fourth tight end, I think Isaiah Ford can make this team.
Yeah, man. I also think a lot of that will also come into play with how is Devontae Parker. I know he's got the finger on his hand broken. The first few years in Miami have not gone well for him, just to say it nicely. It has not gone well, and I think this is a huge year for him, obviously, because they did pick up the fifth-year option, but as we all know, that is something that can be rescinded at the end of the year. And look, they invested a high pick on him in round one back in 2015. You know they want to make it work with him, but it's been a rocky road, to say the least, with him in Miami. Has there been a lot of talk about him? I know he's hurt now, so he's not really on the field participating much, but what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think it's a make or break year for a lot of people in the Dolphins offense, and most notably Devontae Parker. I think he's a guy where he has the physical abilities, the speed, the height, the weight, the everything that you want from a number one receiver, but he hasn't put it all together. You have to have that work ethic, but you have to have that next level commitment to be one of these, you know, elite receivers. So I think that's what we're still waiting to see from Devontae Parker. Obviously the broken finger doesn't help him. There is a hope that they get him back for week one, but right now that's up in the air. And, you know, I think that it's really on, the onus is on Devontae Parker. We've seen Xavien Howard really dominate him in practice at times, which is good for Xavien and bad for Devontae. But this team needs a number one receiver. Kenny Stills is a really good deep threat and a really good complimentary receiver. But right now, you need another big, physical, big play receiver to complement him. And that was supposed to be Devontae Parker. So if it's not Devontae Parker this season, then I think the Dolphins will have to make a decision to move on and find that next guy to do what he hasn't been able to do.
Yep, absolutely. I see it the same way. So I want to thank you so much for joining us on the podcast here tonight. Everyone, be sure to read the work of Cameron Wolf as he covers the Miami Dolphins for ESPN and ESPN.com. And also be sure to follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf. That's CameronWolfe. There's an E at the end of Wolf. So everyone be sure to follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf. Thanks so much tonight, Cameron, and we'll talk to you again down the road for sure.
All right, thanks.
You have a good night.
DolphinsTalk.com is your one-stop source for anything and everything Miami Dolphins. From the award-winning DolphinsTalk.com podcast to original commentary, breaking news, and interviews with current and former players as well as media types, DolphinsTalk.com keeps you up to date and informed with all the latest happenings taking place in the world of the Miami Dolphins. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at DolphinsTalk and to check us out at DolphinsTalk.com every day for all your Miami Dolphins needs.
All right, we're back. And if you missed yesterday's show, then you missed our announcement that we here at the DolphinsTalk.com podcast have a new sponsor. We are now sponsored by The Athletic. And if you don't know what The Athletic is, it's one of the great sports websites out there today. It is a subscription-based website. But if you sign up this week with our link up at DolphinsTalk.com, you can save 40% off, which means if you sign up for the year, it comes down to $2.99 a month, about the same price as a cup of coffee, or less probably these days, and which comes out to about $35 a year or so, or you can sign up for $9.99 a month and just go month to month. But everyone should sign up for The Athletic. Like I said, the link is on our website, DolphinsTalk.com, as well as on our Twitter page. And the reason you want to sign up for it is because, as we said yesterday, they have opened up a part on their website for specific coverage of South Florida and Miami, and they're starting with the Miami Dolphins as they hire two writers we all know and love, Chris Perkins, formerly of the Sun Sentinel, and the big O, Orlando Elzagari of 560 WQAM, who will be on our podcast with us later this week. They have been hired by The Athletic to sort of write about the Dolphins and give a lot of insight about the team. So you're going to want to see their work. And to do that, you have to subscribe to The Athletic. Like I said, it's not that much. It's really cheap. And right now, you can save 40% off. So I encourage everyone, go to our website, click the link, and sign up. Another reason you're going to want to sign up for The Athletic is they have expanded their NFL coverage as well. And they made a big announcement today of four big-name reporters who will be writing strictly for The Athletic on the NFL. And they're all names you've heard of. Jay Glazer, Ross Tucker from SiriusXM NFL Radio, Jay Glazer of obviously Fox Sports and the pregame shows there, Lindsey Jones and Dane Brugler, four big named NFL reporters that we all know, and they are now going to be writing for The Athletic. That's the only place you will be able to read them and get their written content. So again, I encourage everyone to sign up for The Athletic, and because it's a great website. And look, if you listen to a podcast like this, you are a fan of sports, not just the Miami Dolphins. You probably root for an NBA team. You probably root for a team in Major League Baseball. You probably root for the Miami Hurricanes or a team in college sports. And they're going to expand into all the teams in Miami. They're starting off with the Dolphins, but they also have numerous high-level reporters, like guys like Jay Glazer and guys like Ross Tucker, who write about their various sports, whether it's Major League Baseball, if you're a Yankees fan or a Red Sox fan, or whether it's the NBA and you're a fan of the Warriors or Lakers or whoever. So you want to sign up for The Athletic. And I want to actually talk about an article I saw in there today by Chris Perkins. He wrote about the Miami Dolphins and their struggles on third down. And he spoke to Adam Gase about it. It's a great article. And once again, the only place you can read it is at The Athletic. And he brought up some great points, Chris Perkins, in this article, in saying, in last week's game against the Panthers, where they lost 27-20, the Miami Dolphins were 0-5 on third downs. 0-5. And if you look at those third downs, look at what they were. 3rd-and-13, 3rd-and-12, 3rd-and-14, 3rd-and-25. That's 4 of the 5 third downs. The fifth one was a 3rd-and-6, which is manageable. But 3rd-and-13, 3rd-and-12, 3rd-and-14, 3rd-and-25, unacceptable on every level. And the main reason for those third and longs and the third and really longs is because of the penalties and negative plays. Now, not all of those were because of penalties. Obviously, the Miami Dolphins are driving for a touchdown. Laremy Tunsil got called for a hold. That was the reason that set up the third and long there, and they had to settle for a field goal. But, you know, they also had an offensive pass interference call that set up a 3rd-and-25. They also had a running play where Drake sort of fell and he stumbled. And it went from 1st-and-10. Next thing you know, you're in 3rd-and-13 because Drake had a negative play where he stumbled. You had a play where the offensive line got blown up. So, look. We know about how this was a huge issue last year for the Miami Dolphins. Negative plays and penalties. And Chris Perkins here in this article talks about that, and he goes in depth about that, how this can't continue to happen. It has to be fixed. And the one quote he's got here from Adam Gase when he met with Adam Gase about this was, Adam Gase said, it's just something different every time. And he's right. It is something different. It's either a running back falls. It's either the offensive line gets blown up. It's either a holding call. It's an offensive pass interference. It's not just one thing. And that's sort of something Chris Perkins hits on here in this article. And the other thing is, you know, I am 100% guilty of this myself. Anytime I talk about the pre-snap penalties and anytime I talk about how that has to be fixed and what the Miami Dolphins have to do, I put it all at the feet of head coach Adam Gase. Chris Perkins, he brings up another point which he's 100% spot on with. This team has a lot of veterans on offense. And, you know, it's easy to blame the head coach, but it's up to the veterans to hold their teammates accountable. And guys like Amendola, guys like Kenny Stills, guys like Josh Sitton, they have to hold their teammates accountable, and they're going to be the ones who sort of fix this problem. They have to sort of, I mean, certain guys can only get yelled at by a head coach so many times, and it's either going to sink in or it's not. And if it's not, it's not going to fix the problem. But when your teammate, if they start to ride you, maybe then something sort of sinks in and the problems can be fixed. Now, look, it's various guys who are being called for these problems. In the first preseason game, we had the holding call there on Juwan James. That was a bad one. Look, he's been in the league many years, James. He's a veteran. He can't get called for that stuff. He knows it. So having another veteran sort of ride him might not work. But with a lot of the younger guys on this offense, and we do have a lot of young guys, you know, it would be nice to see the veterans, you know, Frank Gore, he's someone I didn't mention as well, sort of take ownership of this and sort of be like, guys, we got to clean this up. And this ain't the head coach yelling at you. This is me yelling at you. And maybe that'll fix it. So Chris Perkins, a great article for those of you who already subscribed to The Athletic. Check it out because it's a great article, a lot of great insight. And he brings up some valid points there. So I wanted to touch on that real quick because he sort of goes in depth there about the Miami Dolphins, the pre-snap penalties, the third and longs that they're in, why they're in third and longs. And he lays out the sequence of play. So a great piece of work there. And once again, everyone sign up for The Athletic. You can also sign up, just head to the website, theathletic.com/Dolphins Talk. That takes you right to the link where you can save 40%. So I think that's all for today. We'll be back with another show tomorrow. I have another guest lined up on a Wednesday show that you're all going to want to hear from. So be on the lookout for that. Once again, I would like to thank Cameron Wolf of ESPN for joining me today on the podcast. And be sure to read his work at ESPN.com as well as follow him on Twitter at Cameron Wolf. That's Wolf with an E at the end, at Cameron Wolf. As always, be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dolphins Talk and visit our website, DolphinsTalk.com. We got a ton of new content up. We have a bunch of new articles from Matt, from Mike Brown, from myself. We have tons of new content up that you're going to want to read, as well as all the podcast and audio shows that you will want to check out as well. I think that's all. Am I forgetting anything? Wherever you listen to this podcast, whether it's on iTunes, SoundCloud, Podbean, Stitcher, TuneIn, be sure to subscribe to it. Leave us a rating and a comment. It's always appreciated. So everyone, have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.